So yes, my one word for today and for this year is practice. As Jill described last week, the process of picking one word for the year is both very simple and quite mysterious. I had that assignment a few weeks ago, and so I started thinking about it, and I asked Jill for help, and I looked at the list of words that she gave me. I talked with Ann about it, and she had some interesting suggestions. But I have this whole dictionary of words in my head, and I was just puzzling over all kinds of possibilities. But somehow in all of that, my focus kept falling back to this one word, practice. And the more I worked on it, and the more I pondered it and discerned about it, the righter it seemed. And so that's what I chose. And so what I want to do in this sermon is to share with you the interesting journey that my one word has led me to experience. That's the reason that I chose the image that's on the cover of today's bulletin. As Jill said, I took a picture of part of the mural that's on the wall down at the end of the hallway where the children go for children's church. It shows a path that follows the contours of the countryside as it descends from the mountains. And that path rises and falls. The path twists and turns. It's an interesting journey. And it'd be a pleasure to walk that path. And so in the same way, my one word has led me to ponder interesting thoughts and to have some new understandings that really seem quite valuable. I have enjoyed walking the journey with practice as my companion. And so, as Jill did last week, part of this sermon is intended to invite you to embark on such a journey in the company of your one word in the weeks ahead. Well, once I'd settled upon my word, I started out by looking it up in the dictionary. One of the interesting things about the word practice is that it can be both a noun and a verb. As a verb, to practice, it means to do something again and again in order to become better at it, as in practicing football. Or it can mean to do something regularly and constantly as an ordinary part of your life, like you might practice hospitality. Or it means to live according to the customs and teachings of some faith. We here at Wildwood Church, we practice Christianity. Or it can also be a noun, which it is a practice, which means an activity of doing something again and again in order to get better at it. My work is part of the practice of medicine. Or practice can be a regular occasion on which you do something, or it's something like piano practice that you do often and regularly. So having identified what its meaning was, which was interesting, I then turned to the concordance in the computer, wondering whether Jesus had ever used the word. Well, I found out that in our New Revised Standard Version of the Bible, Jesus uses the word practice only once, here in Matthew 23. And so the first place that my word led me was to hear Jesus speaking very bluntly about how the scribes and Pharisees failed to practice what they taught. Now, to be honest with you, this is a passage that preachers often try to avoid, because in it, Jesus is not portrayed as a gentle, loving, kind-hearted person. Instead, he is really quite plain-spoken, rather tough-minded, who is not afraid to call a spade a spade. And although he affirms the content of what the scribes and Pharisees taught, he strongly condemns their practice, how they live out their faith. Therefore, do whatever they teach you and follow that, but do not do as they do, for they do not practice what they teach. We clergy, we avoid this practice, this passage, because in our role as religious leaders and teachers, In our day, we are the people who most closely resemble the scribes and Pharisees of the time of Jesus. And when we stand up in this pulpit and teach and preach what we believe, we place ourselves at risk of being like one of those scribes and Pharisees, failing to practice what we preach. And so when we clergy are reading this passage in Matthew 23, we especially are deeply challenged to confront that possibility. So, my one word led me to a place of discomfort, which I found myself invited, more like forced, to set aside, at least to try to set aside all of my denial and all of my self-deceptions and deal with the truth about myself. This process reminded me of the fourth step in the AA 12-step program, which is to make a fearless and searching moral inventory of yourself. To make a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself, that is not fun. It's not something that you can just do quickly and then sort of wrap up neatly. But as much as that kind of honesty is an essential part of an addict's recovery, it is also a part of a healthy and deeply rooted Christian discipleship. So that's where my word took me. And in the months ahead, I will seek to cooperate over and over again as I practice my faith, as I find myself led once again to this place of fearless honesty and growing spiritual integrity. And then, my word led me to remember vividly the years of my childhood and youth in which I practiced the piano almost daily in what turned out to be a failing effort to learn to play. My mother could play the piano pretty well, and there was a piano in our home. And somehow it fell to me, more than to my siblings, to try to fulfill her hope that one of her kids could actually play. And so after we moved to Carlinville when I was in fifth grade, my mother signed me up with a kind lady in the neighborhood, and I started taking lessons. And I practiced, hoping and believing that by playing scales and songs over and over again, that I could achieve competence at the keyboard. And I kept at it, year after year, practicing diligently, probably well beyond the point where it made any sense at all, until finally my failure to achieve success at playing the piano was undeniable, and I stopped practicing the piano. Now, there was nothing wrong with my basic program here. My teaching was adequate, I think. I simply lacked the basic musical talent that piano players have. And looking back, I'm actually quite proud of myself for all of my diligence in practicing all those hours. Because in many elements of life, the best, maybe the only way to achieve skill and competence is to practice. Progressively gaining more and more experience, time and time again doing something that gives you understanding just by simple repetition. And so my one word has led me to think through the elements of my spiritual life and ask myself the question, which of those would be improved with practice, with repetition? How could I find some deeper foundations in my life? How could I strengthen my understandings of my faith? So I've decided to undertake practices this year to accomplish that. Not certain of the goals that I would achieve, it may not work completely, but I found two areas in my spiritual life that I want to practice this year. I hope to find some more. I don't know exactly how many times I have walked the labyrinth our beautiful labyrinth down at the end of the church. It's probably less than 20. When spring comes and the snow melts, I will practice walking the labyrinth. I will also get out a book, and I will look up sites on the internet as a kind of way of taking lessons on labyrinth walking. And exactly what will come of this practice, I do not know. But I do believe that by practicing, I may be able to discover by simple repetition what others, through the history of labyrinth walking, have found in that practice. And secondly, as Jill said, the Faith and Life class right now is working on the topic of photography as a spiritual practice. And if you do look on the website, the WPC closed Facebook page, there you'll see some of the pictures we've been taking. So the other members of that class and I have been using our cameras and our phones to enhance the quality of our seeing, to bring our attention more fully to the world around us. Maybe you saw some of us a couple of weeks ago. The assignment we had in our class was to find and photograph crosses, images of crosses, perhaps just in the brickwork there on the wall. But the process of photographing crosses, and there are really lots of them on the website, on the Facebook page, have helped us to see, to notice, even to behold the world around us. We will do that better if we practice. I will do it if I simply repeat that operation over and over again. Becoming more skilled at seeing the beauty of the world, seeing the glory of God, seeing whatever loveliness, usefulness there is to see with our eyes. And thirdly, the word practice was on my mind when I listened to a story told by a keynote speaker at a psychotherapy convention. People like me listen to stuff like that. It was that combination of the speech plus the word practice that brought me to the third point of the sermon. The story she told was about a large plaster statue of the Buddha in Thailand. This particular statue was not particularly attractive or interesting, and so it was merely one of many, many statues of the Buddha that you can see in Thailand. Well, back in 1955, the decision was made that the statue should be moved. And in the process, the ropes by which the statue was being lifted broke, and the statue fell. And the plaster cracked, and some of the chunks fell off. And the workers discovered that hidden inside that plaster Buddha was the largest solid gold statue in the world. It's a solid gold statue of the Buddha that stands 10 feet tall and weighs more than 5 tons. The precise history of this statue is unknown. Scholars believe that it may have been made back in the 1300s or 1400s. And then in the 1700s, it was covered with stucco, hiding the golden statue to protect it from an invading army. And somehow, the information was just lost that there was a golden statue inside this plaster Buddha. Now, what I discovered pondering the story and also thinking about practice was the truth that our practices do not constitute our identity. Let me say that again. Our practices do not constitute our identity. What people see when they look at us, what they know of us from what we do, our activities and our activity and our practices are like the stucco which was placed on the outside of that statue. Underneath all of that is our soul, the core of our being. It's hard to know exactly what words to use to describe what I'm talking about. that part of our inner self in which the image of God resides. Each one of us at that level in our souls is unique, is profoundly good, astonishingly beautiful, and of incalculable value. Our activities, they change as we mature and as we grow through our lives, as the years pass. If we've engaged in a practice over and over again for a long time, it might seem that that practice is who we are. But that is not the truth that we learn by living in the company of Jesus. If you read the Gospels, you'll find there story after story about Jesus seeing through the externals, knowing people fully and deeply, touching them in their most tender, wounded places, speaking to them words which they deeply needed to hear. Our soul is like a solid gold statue within us. So in just a few short weeks, this word practice has challenged me to fearless honesty. It's invited me to seek growth by repeating some good things in my life over and over again. And it's reminded me that my soul and your soul have amazing beauty and incalculable value. And so I invite you today to join me in choosing your one word and to listen to it and to be led by it, finding for yourself this interesting journey of our faith together. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.